welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, delighted to be your host today. Very exciting. We're talking about wearable technologies and presence of mind with our guest who is live in the studio with me, Heidi Forbes-Ost. How do you pronounce your name? I'm sorry, Heidi. Esta.
Yes, very good.
Okay, Heidi Forbes-Esta. I'm going to call you Heidi, if that's okay.
Perfect.
We're live at Studio132.com in the beautiful Oakland Hills with our sound engineer, BZ Lewis, broadcasting live, and you're welcome to call in to join us on the show today. You can call in to 323-927-2957. That's 323-927-2957. We're live for the next 59 minutes. And if you are listening live, the best experience is to call in and listen on the phone if you're not driving, and if you can do that. Otherwise, the entire show will be available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That is our Twitter handle, PRODMGMTTALK, as well as our hashtag, PRODMGMTTALK. You can search for us on Google, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on any podcast platform to find us. So, let's see. A lot to tell you today. First of all, we're trying out a new tool. It's called CrowdChat, and I want to shout out to our CrowdChat colleagues, Kelsey Mulcahy, as well as Dr. Crowd, who are tweeting with us today. So if you want to come over and join us at crowdchat.net/PRODMGMTTALK, you'll be able to see the live stream of tweets as well as tweet directly in there. They tell me it will automatically include the hashtag and we'll be capturing all of the content there. I also want to thank our sponsors, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, which was founded in 1998 and promotes worldwide excellence in product management education through trainings, the only worldwide certifying body of professional product members, product management and marketing people with the certified product manager, certified product marketing manager, certified innovation leader, certified product agile product manager, and the certified brand manager. You can follow them at AIPMM on the web at www.aipmm.com and check out their Friday webinar series from their site. Thank you to Blame Sally, the local San Francisco band who shares their music with us. They are having some shows coming up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Check them out at Blame Sally. We have a new sponsor this week, Audible.com, which is a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. You can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want, and you can get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial by going to audiblepodcast.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That is Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, podcast.com/PRODMGMTTALK. You can also find more about the Audible sponsorship and the opportunity by going to startupproduct.com. Startup Product is a movement for product excellence. Follow the blog at startupproduct.com and find out about our digital events, broadcasts, archive of past broadcasts, as well as the growing meetup communities worldwide. There is an event happening in Singapore coming up by the by Nick Koster of Brainmates in Australia. There's also a meetup in Australia. There's five or six meetups in the Bay Area that are aligned with the startup product movement. There's four in Latin America. There's a few on the East Coast. So go to startupproduct.com, look under meetups, join a meetup, or start a meetup by becoming an ambassador. Thank you to Webcast Digest, daily curated educational free online events for your continuous learning. Subscribe for $5 a month and you get a calendar, a weekly calendar of over 20 webcast events that are free. How to sign up to learn about offerings, new software, thought leaders, experts who are sharing visual mini lessons across the board. You can search on 8 different categories as well as find out more about your industry and go deeper. Product managers, product people have to be continuously learning to stay up on trends and new entries into their fields. If you would like to get an education in product management, there is a product management fundamentals class. It is being offered in a couple of places. In Oakland at Tech Liminal, starting in July, it's an 8-week, twice-a-week course going into the product management landscape, how to forward your career, as well as all of the fundamentals you would need if you were to take, if there were an undergraduate degree in product management. It covers a wide range of how to get onboarded as a new product manager, as well as how to increase your effectiveness. That's also being offered as an intensive August 25th, 26th, and 27th, I believe, in San Jose. You can find out more about that at Startup Product as well. And, there's some other great things available. If you go to the calendar, there are discounts on conferences, trainings, as well as other free events being listed. So find out more there. By the way, I'm Cindy F. Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. And our guest today, finally, we are talking with Heidi Forbes
Esther,
and she is a many things. She's a global social strategist. She's a visual practitioner, and I'd say educator, as well as a PhD researcher. She recently moved to the Bay Area from Sweden to be closer to research and development in wearables, as well as to increase her vitamin D intake. She's passionate about social optimization and the potential for change as a result of new social technologies. And so she says that developing products that can have an impact on change requires understanding their potential beyond their functional utility. She's currently doing a PhD dissertation research on the relationship between wearable technologies and presence of mind in the workplace. She's using mindfulness and presence and engagement with other measures to determine the impact and potential of wearables in the workplace and beyond. You can follow her on Twitter at Forbes Este, but let me spell that to you. It's at Forbesoste, and I believe that is her website as well. It is www.forbesoste.com. And I met Heidi through the recent Glazed conference in the Bay Area just a couple of weeks ago, and she covered that conference beautifully in visual graphics. You were live scribing during the event.
Yes, I was doing that with an iPad. I do that for a lot of events, but primarily events that are of interest to my research area or curiosity, because I find that adding the layer of knowledge or curiosity about the content makes it a lot easier to create visuals that people really relate to and capture the whole piece of what people are trying to express.
Which is so beautiful, though, because people do take in information all different ways, and we've arrived at a time that technology enables that. So I'm very excited about the redoing of education, how we share information, but as well as how we deconstruct how we've previously forced or pushed information out in one mode when people learn in all different ways and take in information in all different ways. And hey, I want to do a shout out to Bree Johnson and Gil Zeberfeld who have joined us. I think they've come into our crowdchat.net. /PRODMGMTTALK dashboard. So welcome. Thanks for joining us to try out a new tool. So Heidi, why don't you fill in what I left out? You are an expert in so many different areas. So why don't you share with us what brings you here?
Yeah, I think, in the context of what you're looking at, there's so many different crossovers, like you said. So it's hard to know where to start. But I guess right near where my passion really lies in this space of understanding the potential for wearables to really impact our mindfulness and presence of mind and being more active and involved in the system. And the reason that relates really to my social strategy background is because I felt that was really the missing piece, that how can we get people to engage more effectively and to be more involved in social and digital strategy, because when it comes down to it, it's really the people. If they're not engaging authentically, then you're starting from the wrong launching point. So if we can help people shift their mindset and be more aware of who they are and how they are engaging with others, then there's so many more possibilities to really create amazing things and create change. So if hopefully we get some positive results from the research from my dissertation, we may at least have a glimpse into some of the tools that can help us shift our mindfulness and presence.
So then why don't we start with, how do you define wearables or tech wearables? Because this certainly is right at the front of this technology. I think GlazeCon, that may have been the first big event of that size. There has been other tech conferences that had wearables as a side, one of the themes, but certainly I think that was the biggest, at least in the Bay Area, that was just focused on wearable technology, where we're going, what's possible now. So how do you find what a wearable is? Is that different than a tech wearable? Is it one in the same?
Wearable technology is obviously anything that you can wear that's a technology in sort of the broadest sense. But in the sense of what I'm looking at, it's more the wearables that are, in the category you would describe as discrete wearables. So something that is, when you're wearing a helmet that's, got a specific purpose, but that you wouldn't necessarily be normally wearing a helmet in that context. It's a little bit distracting, so it's not, a little bit maybe understating it. It's not going to have the same kind of impact or result when you're interacting with other people. It becomes sort of a distraction piece. So I'm looking at things that are, there's lots of different categories, but there's the category I'm particularly looking at is the monitor alert category. You also have sort of these miniaturization of mobiles that are things like smartwatches and whatnot. You have obviously Google Glasses, which is, and sort of the whole glasses movement of various other things that are really in a category of their own. But for the purpose of my research, I'm really looking at more the discrete wearables piece. So it's things that can help us monitor and our behavior and things around us, but also provide us alerts in a discrete way so that we can do both quantified self, but also be aware of the things that that are going on around us that we may miss without having a subtle way of sending us notifications.
Excellent. So I want to do a shout out to John Furrier, who's joining us, who says that in answer to the question of how do you define wearables or tech wearables, he says that anything with an IP address or RFID equivalent is wearable tech. So he's taking it to a very technical level, meaning that if we have a sensor attached to anything, that is somewhat discreet and that enables us to be findable. And so he's considering even at that level as a wearable tech. But you're looking at things that aren't just adding technology, but that are forwarding the individual's awareness or perhaps increasing their productivity or enabling them to monitor something that is personal to them in terms of their physical functioning or biological process?
Yeah, it's physiological, biological, but it's also because of the alert potential, because now there's a lot more crossover where you're getting notifications and alerts that are coming from the outside via a cell phone or via a more direct connection, that we're able to sort of receive those signals that aren't necessarily coming internally from our own body functioning. So EEG is going to monitor sort of our own brain functioning, but an alert, for example, that's coming from a ring that lets you know that there's a critical notification your child is trying to reach you is also on a wearable that's in a discrete function. So that notification you're not necessarily going to get from your own brain, but it's still in that same category of discrete wearables that I'm studying.
Excellent. So Kelsey McKay says she's also very interested in wearable sports tech and where tech can improve your... I will say I'm using crowdchat.net and it's helping to view the tweets. So she's interested in wearable sports tech that can improve your game.
Mm-hmm.
And So great. So how are you doing this research? What is the nature of it? Is it, I do a lot of ethnographic research, which is really hard for engineers to understand because it's much harder to quantify or put metrics around until you have enough pattern recognition. But I think that's really where you need to start to really appreciate the audience without presuppositions.
Yeah. The study I'm doing will have a two-phase, one which will be quantitative and the second will be qualitative. So the first piece is going to be done through using a mindfulness assessment that is going to be done on a regular basis over the course of 8 weeks while the users are going to be adopting to the wearables. So in the beginning, we'll establish a baseline pre-wearables, and then they'll each have a different wearable device. We've got about 100 people that are going to be in the study, and at this point it looks like we have about 12 different devices that will be used. Not all, each individual will have one device. And then they'll be measured over the course of the 8 weeks on this assessment. And then at the end, we will be doing a World Cafe, which is in a World Cafe format, but essentially a focus group where they'll be talking about their experience. And there it's focusing more on the social presence or presence of mind with others' experience. So hopefully we'll get some really good both qualitative and quantitative data.
Let's talk about World Cafe because the founder, who I can't think of his name, but is doing lots of conferences in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and I was very attracted to it, and it's similar to open space tech, where the idea is to bring people together, and the value comes out of the rich engagement of people when they're sitting next to each other in a relaxed atmosphere, which is totally the opposite of tech conferences where there's a format and a structure and there's experts, you know, pontificating from the stage and the audience is passive. So I really like the idea of the World Tech. It's also similar to, they call it Lean Coffees.
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, I mean, it gives everybody the opportunity to be the expert, so that what you're trying to get is the full activity of each of the participants, rather than just a few voices participating. And in a way, it works really well with things like the visual practice that I've been working with, where you're capturing things visually, and in that effort, and it's often referred to as graphic facilitation, you're really capturing the input from every participant. There's no one that's voices left behind. There's certainly voices that are louder, but when you end up with the final piece, you really have a balanced product that has the input from all participants, even those that in other forms of research tend to sort of sit on the sidelines, because they're able to give you their yes-no answers and no input beyond that.
And that was essentially how this all started, that I thought that Twitter was a medium, was a platform that enables every voice to be heard. And actually, people can go to Storify.com/PRODMGMTTALK, and they can actually read conferences, including the GlazeCon, because there's transcripts of tweets. So anyone who tweeted during that conference or used that hashtag is collected in a Storify. And so not only are the speakers, I mean, it's usually the speakers aren't tweeting, it's everyone else who is commenting or retweeting or adding content. And that's why I love Twitter, because it enables a way to replicate a World Cafe in digital form, but also enables everyone to participate no matter where they're located.
Yeah.
It's not the same as being in the room, because you do miss the facial and the body movements, and you know, people can't see how I'm using my hands through Twitter. But I find, again, even using all the tools. In a recent tool, we had a speaker from Squiggle, which is a collaboration tool which lets everyone be on screen. So no matter where anyone's located, it's almost like you're in the room with them, because they're all constantly on your screen, and it's very lightweight. It's beautiful. But even that, there's a separation, because there's a delay, and you're still interacting with them via a screen.
Yeah, I think, when we do the World Cafe, because of the nature of trying to get 100 people together, there will be some people that will be participating virtually. And, that obviously does have some hurdles to overcome. But fortunately, the group that we'll be using for this particular sample are very comfortable with the virtual tools, because they're being selected from the population that is part of my PhD group, which we do a lot of our work online using GoToMeeting. Previously, we were using WebEx. But so there's less of that adoption process of, okay, now I've got to be on the screen and this is really uncomfortable. It's more, okay, let's get right into the conversation. But I think that essentially when you're doing research or you're having these conversations, sometimes the tools and the technology does get in the way of the flow of sharing. And so you have to be very much aware of that and take that into account when you're calculating your results or looking at the input, because sometimes the most powerful voices are less heard because they are just not comfortable with the technology that's being used.
Exactly. They're not comfortable with the technology. They're intimidated because this I hear so much, that, I'm not technical enough, so I can't contribute to the conversation. Or I'm not, I'm not expert enough. But really, the experts need the feedback from people who aren't deeply immersed, because that's where that's so valuable to hear a fresh perspective,
mm-hmm.
as well as that's the customer experience, that's the user experience.
Exactly.
And it's a problem for product managers who get too deeply embedded in the product that it kind of filters their perspective and they forget what it's like not, you know, seeing the product for the first time or not having an understanding of the context of the product.
Well, it's so much of sort of the preaching to the crowd concept. I think that's something that really strikes me every time I go to South by Southwest is you have this group of people that are, you know, they're all the early adopters and they're all like, this is going to be huge because everybody here is using it. And then you leave there and you go to the real world and most people are sort of looking at you saying, well, what is that? Why would I need that? And, you know, how does it work? And I don't really get the purpose of this and I don't have the time for it. So you have to really understand who you're developing for and how they're going to potentially use it and if it's useful to them. And I think that's, you know, taking it back to really where is the value that you're providing as opposed to just creating these things that are fun or cool or, you know, the next great thing. But if it's not going to be used, it's not so great after all.
Right. And I had... there was a tweet going around that it's not about how well you can explain the product. It's how well your users or your customers can explain the product to other people. That's what you want to enable them to do.
Mm-hmm. I do find that with the visuals that I do at conferences, the speakers really, they really appreciate the visuals because for them, it's a way of understanding what people are hearing.
Yes.
And so it's giving them feedback on what messages are coming through in their presentations. And so I think that's something that I hadn't really thought about. It was more I was looking at, okay, well, this is helpful for other people to have sort of a way to for memory recall of what was being said. For myself, it was a way of taking notes. But the speakers are often like, please, I need a copy of that because it
yes.
helps me redefine my presentation so that I make sure that the key points that I'm really trying to get across are getting across.
Right. I was at a maker fair, I think it was a couple of years ago, and there was someone live scribing, and she was doing it on a huge board.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because afterwards, the boards... people could were around the room, so if people missed that talk, they could walk to the board, and as well as I noticed that there would be a discussion in front of the board of
yeah.
people who were interested. I thought that was so beautiful, and I noticed that she had interpreted something a speaker said very differently than I did,
mm-hmm.
and I actually said, no, that's not what he said, and she was like, well, it doesn't matter. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
So I realized it was her interpretation of what was important. So it is really a piece of art as well.
Yeah, although technically you are really supposed to use their words.
Well, it was an interpretation,
yeah.
and it's, you know, I was listening from a different perspective clearly than she was.
Yes. Yeah.
What I thought was important was not as important to her.
Yeah.
So, but I'm just fascinated. Look, I also want to underline, there's a skill set involved in live scribing. I can take notes, and that's why I love Twitter, because I can type fast, and that's how I'll capture my notes. And so Twitter kind of lets me broadcast live what I'm notating to myself that I want to listen. You know, I change things around on Twitter to make sure I'm sharing valuable things. But if I could draw, I mean, the ability to draw, to take a concept, turn it into a visual, and know how to communicate visually, as well as have the skill to draw at all, those are highly advanced things. And now, did you go to school to learn how to do that?
I did do training at several different places. One was the Grove, actually, in San Francisco. But I think one thing that people, a misperception with the visual practice that a lot of people have is that it's all about being able to draw. And that it's, if you look at some of the the scribes, the drawing is actually the most simplistic part. Now, of course, there are people that are incredibly talented illustrators that are also in the field, so I don't want to discount that at all, and that's an incredible talent. But to be able to capture is much more about deep listening and synthesis and really putting things into context and into various buckets so that it's easier to process when you're viewing it. And there's several different parts of the visual practice, but even when you're talking about just scribing, it's capturing things in buckets, it's deep listening, it's being able to synthesize, and then it's being able to find ways to using metaphors to be able to explain them in a very simple way so that that it is clear and concise. And those different pieces are totally different than just the drawing piece, because anyone can draw a stick figure.
Yeah, anyone can draw a stick figure. It may not communicate what you wanted to communicate. By the way, we're at the half-hour mark, and you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. We're at www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Today we are discussing wearable technologies and presence of mind with Heidi Forbes Este, who is a global social strategist, a visual practitioner, and a PhD researcher. You're welcome to join us live if you want to call in at 323-927-2957. And our six-time Emmy-winning sound engineer, BZ Lewis, will screen your call. You're also welcome to join us at crowdchat.net/PRODMGMTTALK. And I just want to do a shout-out to thank our sponsors, Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. You can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want, and get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audiblepodcast.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Join our sponsors' Friday morning webcast series at AIPMM, and follow the @startupproduct and go to startupproduct.com for all of this information, as well as archives from past shows, events, and the worldwide community and movement for product excellence. Okay, so one of the questions was, can wearables change the way we interact with others? And I think we were talking about how live scribing changes how people interact at an event where there is a visual practitioner. But is that the intention of wearables? Is it essentially for individuals to change their awareness or increase their awareness, or is it about increasing their engagement with others?
Well, I think this is where it's sort of fascinating to me in terms of product development, because it's, some of the development is really focused on just the one functional piece of sort of, is it going to measure how many steps? Is it going to measure, how much we're breathing, or if we're breathing well, if we're sleeping well, these things. But when you look from a holistic perspective, all of these things impact, how our day, how we function in a very different way. Because if we get enough sleep, if we move enough, if we are taking better care of ourselves by putting the right foods in our bodies, then we are much more aware of ourselves, and we are much better prepared to engage with other people, because we're not falling asleep at the table, or we're not, antsy, and we're, feeling like we need to have that movement. There's all kinds of research on the importance of getting up and moving around a little bit every couple hours. There's, obviously lots of research on sleep and getting the right amount of sleep, possibly even taking naps. There's research on all of these different areas, but when you put them all together and layer them to try to understand how they impact how how we are not just physically, but how we are and how we present ourselves, then I think that we can have a much greater impact on the world. And so I think in terms of product development, generally it's not thought about the holistic piece of it. It's only looking at those individual functions. But I think that it is a piece that should be considered when looking at product development and looking at sort of the user's needs, because ultimately they're trying to fix something. They're not just, oh, I think I should walk more, so I need to measure my steps, or, you know, I want to know how many steps I'm doing. It's not that. It's I'm trying to feel better. I'm trying to take better care of myself. So all of these different pieces are what the user's needs are. And if we understand the implications of taking more steps and getting good sleep, the bigger picture, I think that it's we're going to produce better products that are going to answer those questions.
And right, but I think, you know, the excitement and attention has to do with the other kinds of products, you know.
Sure.
Which often are, look, the industry, as in every new tech entry or new category, we have to look at the things that are the most exciting or the things that will be hyped, but then that brings attention to enable building the right products. Unfortunately, it's just, I think, human behavior. So Kelsey Mulcahy had said that wearable tech is changing our relationship with space and people because simple gestures can now become controls, such as the there's a future, Intel came out with a future of entertainment series by IQ. There's a camera, I guess, attached to an arm, and just with moving your arm, you can take pictures or she shared a resource. Thanks, Kelsey. And so the Dr. Crowd says more and more people looking to wearable tech to see their health improve, which is really what the intention. That's going to forward everyone if we can increase tech. And I was at a biotech conference last week, and they were talking about not specifically wearables, but they were saying it's very simple now to test for cancer. And that I think he was referencing a new tech and enabling people to monitor themselves rather than depending on a third party that isn't focused on the context of how they're living or what they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, last week I actually did the sketchnoting for a conference on digital health. And there was all kinds of very interesting conversations about everything from the larger picture of digital health, but there were some movements in, particularly in the wearable space, that are very exciting. But ultimately, it's the questions that are the hardest to answer that are going to be, how can we collect this information in a passive way so that people can actually, you know, get this monitoring themselves without doing something invasive. The big sort of the gold mine that everyone's looking at is, you know, how can we measure the blood sugar levels so that, people with type 2 diabetes don't have to prick their finger or do a saliva test. There's all kinds of things in that space as well that are, you know, the further we get to answering these questions so that we can understand, the different needs of the entire population, but also in terms of wellness for organizations. One of the participants in our study, or one of the devices, is actually being used in a corporate wellness program through Virgin. It's called Virgin Pulse. And they've had great results with, you know, people are doing they're using this device to monitor their health, but they're finding that it's having implications with their entire life. And they're finding that they are being more productive in their work. They're finding that the side effects that they're having these, you know, great response with that they hadn't anticipated. Because they went in thinking, okay, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to measure my steps, or I'm going to make sure that I'm getting enough sleep. So, you know, even if they buy or they buy into a program or they become part of a program or they're using a device for one particular application, they are finding that it is impacting the rest of their wellness and their general health picture, which will have implications on the entire insurance system. It will have implications on organizations and recruiting and sustainability. So it has much larger implications when you look at the bigger picture.
Excellent. So Jenny Taylor asked about the biotech. It was Techonomy Bio, Jenny. So I'm going to post the that discussion about cancer. Yeah, that's very exciting. So do you think that wearable technologies act as a barrier or an entry? Clearly, my goal would be not only wearables, but every piece of technology should serve to forward humanity, to forward individuals, to forward learning organizations, to forward sustaining better workplace environments, and certainly more mindfulness for the individuals. I think we're at a point in time that we've been talking for it a long time that you can be your whole self wherever you are, and certainly it seems like here in the bubble people are constantly working, so they have to bring their whole self because they're bringing their whole work to everything else they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of is it a hindrance or is it a – I think really it's an opportunity. I think wearables are really still very much in their infancy, and there's still a lot of that, gadget mode where it's sort of in that first stage of the internet where it's like, oh, let's, look at this great tool. What can we do with it? And so there's a lot of that sort of what can we do with these things? How can we wear our technology in a different way? And what can we make it do? Everything from, robotics to just something that's going to, trigger a smile. But I do think that it's all a question of making it more passive and more user-friendly, and then we're actually going to get to a place where it's going to help us with productivity, with wellness, with all of these different things. While it's still somewhat invasive and sort of this, it's the shiny thing on the table, or it's the thing that you're, what's that device you're wearing on your head, then it does become sort of this, it becomes a barrier. Both for yourself and for the people that you're interacting with, because, as we've seen in San Francisco, there's been issues with people wearing Google Glass where, other people are saying, you're not allowed to wear glass in this place. I don't want to be filmed. Well, they may not be filming. They may be, sending an email, or they may not be doing anything with it, quite frankly. But there's a sort of backlash at this point because people aren't really sure about this space. And so it's still a learning period, which is a great thing because there's a lot of opportunity for growth.
Yeah, well, I think part of Google Glass being a problem has to do with it's a status symbol, and that engenders divide. It divides people rather than. Certainly my intention is that technology brings people together.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone had Google Glass, it wouldn't be a problem. So maybe, hey, Google, give them away free. Give them away to everyone who's complaining or fearful of them. I mean, that's how you change the culture or certainly the adoption. Currently, the early adopters are in a bubble, and in an arrogant bubble, and in an entitled bubble. And that's where I think really is the problem. It's not about the device itself. It's about that it's representing things, especially in certain areas in San Francisco, where it's the opposite of inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's certainly that, but even with the wearables, like the activity monitors, some people choose to share their data. Some people choose to keep it to themselves. And, you know, whether people are incentivized by working with a group to raise their fitness levels or whether people are, you know, just doing it for themselves to track, to try to improve them. I know a lot of people that have, you know, I get all kinds of feedback from people now because of the research that I'm doing. I have friends coming up to me all the time saying, oh, well, I wore it for 2 months, and then I started feeling guilty because I wasn't taking enough steps, so I took it off. You know, you get all kinds of different things, but, you know, or they said, oh, well, all my friends were giving me a hard time because I wasn't keeping up with them on the amount of steps I was taking or whatever it was. I think we need to get over that space, too, and learn better incentives for doing better, for taking better care of ourselves, rather than, you know, having someone give you a pat on the back or send you a smiley, because in general you don't get the smiley, you get the people going, hey, you haven't done enough, you know, what's going on, I haven't heard from you. And I guess it sort of goes with my philosophy of, you know, it's not do unto others as you would have done unto you. It's do unto others as they would have done to them, you know, to them. So everybody's different in what incentivizes them. And so if we can find a way to work into that kind of reciprocity loop where people are getting what they need and what they want rather than what other people think they need or want, that there we're going to actually see a cultural shift and behavior change. But until that happens, I think it's still going to be this place where sharing is you know, not everybody's open to it because it feels invasive.
Yeah, and Gil Zilberfeld makes a couple of good points. He's saying he's not sure regarding what I had said about Google Glass. Maybe if they gave them away and everyone had them, he's saying he's not sure if everyone had them, the issue would go away because it's still about privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take a long time, Kelsey says. It might take a long time to accept the fact that you may be recorded at any point, and that, right, that is a huge issue, because the intention of wearables is to be capturing data, recording or communicating that data, whether you're sharing it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because what else? I mean, well, at least where we're at, it's all about monitoring.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so what is meant by greater mindfulness in the workplace? I think you're touching upon it, but if you want to underline it, because certainly the idea of mindfulness has been around, and it almost seems to be the antithesis of using technology, because if you are, it's tuning in, being centered, being grounded, mm-hmm. being aligned with my own intentions, my own processes, whereas technology takes me outside of myself.
Yeah, I think, well, there's one thing I would want to clarify, because mindfulness is often associated with sort of Zen Buddhism and meditation. And In this context, I'm not necessarily specifically looking at meditation, although some people use meditation as a practice for mindfulness. I think for me, mindfulness is really, as you were saying, it's about having a sense of self and being in the moment. And so it's about presence and really knowing who I am and, you know, what brought me here and how I'm engaging with the world. And so when you're looking at it from that perspective, and particularly in the workplace, it's about being authentic. And this is where it comes back into social strategy for me. And my work with social strategy and teaching the, you know, social optimization over the years was really about helping people understand what their story was, and with both from individual perspective and from the organization perspective. And so what, you know, who are you when you come to the table and have this conversation? Who are you when you're writing about yourself or when you're engaging with your workforce? So until you know who you are and can be present in who you are, it's very hard to engage in a social strategy and to, you know, to part of knowing what you want and what you need is knowing who you are. So mindfulness for me is really about getting to that place where, you know, you can be in the moment. And when you can be in the moment, you can engage much more effectively in the workforce, particularly in a leadership role, but in any role, because you're not trying to be, it takes a lot of energy to be something you're not. And a lot of us spend a lot of time trying to be that, because that's what's expected or that's what we think is expected, but you're hired for who you are. So if you're not presenting yourself as who you are, you're doing yourself and your organization a disservice. So the more you can be yourself, the happier you're going to be and the more effective you're going to be, because you're spending more energy being rather than trying to be. So it really comes down to those basic principles for me. And then, you know, once you are you are being, it's a lot easier to communicate that and to be involved in with other people in a more authentic level.
Awesome. People are resonating. Dr. Crowd appreciated the clarification that mindfulness means presence in how you're engaging authentically. So how do you propose we achieve mindfulness in the workplace? Because certainly if you walk into any co-working space that isn't even a structured corporate environment, everyone's head down in front of their devices. Hey, you just have to go to a coffee shop. So I'm sure they're being very mindy or heady while they're dealing with their devices. But how do you expand upon that? How do you increase engagement? Because I don't need to be authentic. Well, I certainly do for everything that I do, because, you know, I'm intentional and strategic about sharing information, to open doors and network and include people. But it doesn't require, I don't know. How do you do this? How do you propose we achieve mindfulness in the workplace?
Well, first I have to say that it takes baby steps. You know, you're not gonna, you know, change everyone overnight. And some people will really struggle with this, because part of it is just evolving as individuals. And really, some people are stuck in sort of that teenage mode of the world revolves around them and that's all there is. And so they really can't get beyond that. And that you may not be able to change, but maybe you can shift it a little. What I'm hoping to be able to do is to, you know, provide an understanding of some of the tools that can help us make some of those shifts. So, for example, if something that's going to help us with our posture so that we're sitting upright, so that we can have eye contact when we do interact with people, that's one step closer to creating a more authentic engagement with that other person. And once you make that eye contact and you share a smile, you feel a sense of satisfaction. The other person feels a sense of satisfaction, and they may turn around and engage with somebody else in that same way. It's those little steps. And if something like a wearable that can help you with your posture can trigger that effect, then great. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I can change everything overnight or that we're going to all of a sudden become incredibly mindful. But if we can do little things to make us more aware of that, okay, well, if I'm not getting enough sleep and that's affecting how my presence today, maybe I should make an effort to go to bed half an hour earlier, and then I can actually wake up in the morning and come into the office and be ready to work instead of having to run around drinking four cups of coffee to give myself a trigger, and then I'm on high speed for the next 3 hours. So it's those little adjustments that if we can be more aware of them by using some of these tools, then maybe we can shift some of the mindfulness and awareness.
Excellent. Excellent. Jenny Taylor agrees with that. Chatting with coworkers while doing mundane tasks. Hector Fuente Perez says that when value is much greater than cost, there will be a shift. Thank you, Hector. And Jenny also resonates with, sure, a couple more hours of sleep will help immensely. And I think it was recently I was reading Arianna Huffington was talking about the value of sleep.
Sleep your way to the top, she says.
Yes.
Yeah.
Literally. Literal sleeping. So so do you think that wearables have a place in the workforce beyond utility? So we need to define what we mean by utility to begin with.
Well, I think if you're looking at the actual function of the wearables, then that's sort of the utility piece. But like I was saying, if you can, you know, if the correcting your posture makes you engage more effectively, or if something that reminds you with an idle alert to get up every hour and a half and move around, and then you go to the water cooler and you have that interaction with someone else in your office that you normally wouldn't interact with, or you just get up and move around a little bit and get your circulation going. The getting up and moving around may be the utility, but what it does for your productivity and your general wellness, that's where you're going to actually see the change. And so it's looking at, for example, the companies that have been adopting this Virgin Pulse, where they're looking at it as, this is a wellness program. We're going to provide the devices for all of our employees because we think this is going to change the general wellness of our organization. So, you know, when you're talking about, one of your callers was talking about the value piece. Well, if organizations start adopting the wearables as something that's going to change the general wellness of the organization, maybe they'll start providing the wearables or at least support, you know, partially by subsidizing them so that people can adopt the ones that, you know, they maybe can choose. What is it that they need to use in order to shift their wellness? Because each individual is going to be different as to what their issue is.
Excellent. So Gil Zuberfeld asks, is there a risk of people becoming their own doctors?
I don't think that's any different than it was before. I mean, WebMD and those have been around forever. So I think, if anything, it just becomes a helpful tool for being able to provide our doctors with more information than they could before, because we can't necessarily recall exactly how much exercise we've been getting unless you're going to be sitting down tracking it, or how much sleep you've been getting. So when you can provide your doctors with more current information, they can diagnose and they can help you with better solutions. So, for example, this conference I was at last week on digital health, there was a lot of conversation about the importance of, you know, being able to provide the doctors with more accurate and current information. Then it can help provide better wellness programs that are really suited to the employees, instead of just blanket doing something that doesn't necessarily apply to the activity or the needs of the employees.
Excellent. And so we've come to the end of the hour. Thank you to all our tweeters. And using crowdchat.net, and I believe this will be archived at crowdchat.net/PRODMGMTTALK. Hopefully the archive will be there. People have been sharing other readings and information, as well as you mentioned the most recent conference you went to. So I can add a link to that for people to view. And also, if people go to our guest's website, which is at FORBESOSTE, you can see her visual graphics of conferences she has covered, as well as she has a number of really informative videos out on YouTube talking about social strategy, as well as her research. Now, if people want to get involved in the current research you're doing, is it too late? Do you already have your full sample?
No. Well, if they're in the Bay Area, I'm trying to actually get participants that are in the Bay Area so we can get more people that can participate in the actual World Cafe at the end physically. They will be able to do it online. But they could contact me directly at through my website or at info@ForbesAustee.com. We are welcoming some additional devices if anybody's got a device that they would like to add to it. We have enough devices to do it, but I think the wider range of devices would be really interesting, and we could certainly add more to our sample if people are interested in participating. So feel free to contact me if you'd like to be part of it. We would need them available by August, and the study will be started in September.
Excellent. Very exciting. So I'm going to talk to you more about doing the research, being a research person, or guinea pig, I think it is. So you've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk. Our guest has been Heidi Forbes Este, who's a PhD researcher on wearable technologies and presence of mind. You can find out more about her research at Forbes, FORBESOSTE.com. You can send email to info@FORBESOSTE.com to get involved with the research. And thank you so much to crowdchat.net. We've used a new tool, and it was very interesting to be able to tweet and retweet, as well as it enabled people to share on Facebook. So I'll be reviewing that tool following the event. This is Cindy Faye Solomon. Join us next week for the Global Product Management Talk. We will have, I believe, another woman in technology talking. I believe the founder of Techliminal will be with us. So join us to talk further about bringing technology to community. And you can hear the archives and follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK and sign up to get a free audiobook at audiblepodcast.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Thank you, Heidi, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And this was a great talk, and have a great week.
On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love if you found me.